Hello, my name is I'm Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 753. This is called YouTube Boot, Snowden's Ride, an overview. This program is going to be an overview of not only a massive body of information that I have already put together on the SpitfireList.com website, but also a number of programs that I am going to be doing about the incredibly important and amazingly misunderstood operations of Edward Snowden, the former CIA and NSA analyst, probable BND mole, but someone I call Eddie the Friendly Spook. It is amazing to me to watch people getting this whole thing entirely wrong, which they are. I am going to be doing my best to set the record straight. I want to, first of all, a few preliminary remarks as veteran listeners to the program. And, oh, by the way, this is being recorded on August 18th of the year 2013. As veteran listeners to the program and users of the SpitfireList.com website know, I am recovering from major oral surgery. I had an infected tooth which spread to my jaw, and I had 15 hours of surgery, spent the better part of 2 weeks in intensive care, and lost a lot of my teeth as a result. I'm getting better. We'll be getting partial dentures. However, I am arm wrestling the medical bureaucracy. A couple of quick points. When I am finished doing that, I will no longer be talking like Elmer Fudd, or a mixture of Elmer Fudd and Daffy Duck. However, with no lower front teeth, it's just not all that easy to do. Those will be replaced at some point, and I will be sounding much more like the Dave Emery of old. I am resuming program production at an increasing pace, and the programs and the descriptions for those will be on the SpitfireList.com website presently. I am easing back into it. I am not holding myself to a rigorous program production schedule. Suffice it to say that people who value this program and my work can be happy for two things. First of all, they can be damn happy that this didn't happen 25 years ago, because if it had, medical technology would not have evolved to the point where they could have helped me and I would have died. Also, they can be very happy that I have a strong constitution, which I most assuredly do. I am a tough SOB, and because of that, I am in good shape and getting better. However, again, if I don't sound quite the same, there's a damn good reason for that. I have no lower front teeth, so again, I get my Elmer Fudd on, so to speak. I guess you could say that I put my Fudd in my mouth when I speak. So anyway, another point, I was barely out of intensive care when I began blogging again. My first post-operational blog, I was again just out of intensive care on October 12th of 2011. I have been writing away. I have a tremendous amount of information on the SpitfireList.com website. A brilliant young researcher who posts under the name of Terra Fractal, that's PTERRAFRACTYL, has also been posting on the website as sort of a co-contributor. In the news and supplemental section, I have already done something like 19 or 20 different posts. They already comprise something of a small book on what I call Snowden's Ride. And listeners who would like to get a jump on the series of shows that I am going to be doing, can visit the SpitfireList.com website. They can select the news and supplemental category and read away, because I have a ton of information already up there. In some of the programs to come, I'm going to have a designated reader, so to speak, whom I call Seven of Nine, and he will be helping me to read from some of the articles, because reading still is a bit of a challenge in terms of making my old equipment work properly. In any event, however, on this show, I am going to be giving an overview of the, what I call, Snowden's Ride, the exploits of Eddie the Friendly Spook. Those of you who are baby boomers may remember a cartoon series featuring Casper the Friendly Ghost. Well, I call Eddie Snowden Eddie the Friendly Spook. Eddie Snowden is an intelligence officer. He is a spook. He worked for NSA, he worked for CIA, he worked for Booz Allen Hamilton, an intelligence front, and he probably is networked in some capacity with BND, the German Intelligence Service, and the successor organization to the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit, about which I have spoken and written so often. That last part is conjectural. However, as we delve into Snowden's Ride, we are going to see a lot of very, very interesting things taking place in Europe as a result of this. A few introductory remarks. First of all, I can appreciate that much, perhaps most, of what I'm going to have to say in connection with Eddie the Friendly Spook will be at variance with what people have been accustomed to thinking. People have heard Eddie Snowden lionized as some sort of defender of civil liberties, as a true hero, a patriot. He is none of those things. He is an ultra-right winger. I think it would be very fair to describe him as a fascist. Discussing his political views is something that I will be touching on later in this program and that we will be dealing with at length in the future. People can go to a post, again, in the news and supplemental category on the SpitfireList.com website and access the post, The Ultra-Right-Wing Views of Eddie Snowden, or Eddie the Friendly Spook, as I think I call them, or Fast Eddie. I've used all of those terms, and Citizen Assange, like WikiLeaks, which is a far-right-wing, Nazi-linked spook operation. More about that later. Eddie the Friendly Spook is the opposite of what he has been represented as being in so many different circles. Now, in that regard, again, the concept of the big lie is a very difficult thing for people to deal with. People are undoubtedly familiar with the big lie, and people go, oh, yeah, right, yeah, sure, the big lie, groove, groove. It's not that easy. In Mein Kampf, Adolf Hitler's political manifesto, Hitler wrote, most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Again, they would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Hitler then went on to write, even explanations would long leave them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would incline them to accept a thing as true. All good liars know this, therefore, and stop at nothing to achieve this end. A point, Adolf Hitler wasn't some lone nut, and he wasn't a guy with burning eyes and a remarkable rhetorical capability. He was, by all accounts, a very galvanizing public speaker, but Adolf Hitler was a German army intelligence agent who was infiltrated into a moribund political party in order to elevate that into a front for introducing the supposedly demobilized German army into German civilian society. We've spoken about that in AFA program number 10 and a miscellaneous archive show about the origins of the American, of the German Nazi Party. There is also a book in the books category available for download called Armies of Spies by Joseph Gollum, published in 1939, that talks about Hitler as a German army intelligence agent. He was a spook. So is Eddie Snowden. That's why I call him Eddie the Friendly Spook. Now, before we move on, another thing to consider in connection with how absolutely powerful, how politically seductive the concept of the big lie is, there is a social psychology experiment that is quite well known. Now, in this experiment, usually done with a teacher and a class, one student is held as the experimental subject, and either the entire class or part of it, depending on how big the class is, are used as collaborators in the subject. Now, the person conducting the experiment draws two lines on a blackboard, one of which is very much longer than the other one. The other line is obviously very much shorter than the other line. All of the people in the class are coached to, when they are asked which line is the longer line and which one is the shorter line, they are all coached to say that the very obviously longer line is in fact the shorter line, and that the very obviously shorter line is in fact the longer line. The teacher or the person conducting the experiment then goes around the classroom, asks each of the students which line is the longer line and which line is the shorter line. They all reply that the line that is in fact much longer, very obviously longer than the other one, is the shorter line, and that the shorter line is in fact the longer line. The experimental subject is the last person to be asked in the experiment, and generally the subject, after hearing everybody say that the longer line is the shorter one and the shorter one is the longer one, even though this person can very clearly see that one line is longer than the other and that everybody else is wrong, they usually say the first time around, well, yeah, the one line, meaning the longer line, is the shorter line, and the shorter line is the longer line. Some subjects are more resistant to this than others, so sometimes they have to go all around the classroom several times, but almost inevitably, the experimental subject says it eventually comes around to saying that, yep, the shorter line is the longer line, and the longer line is the shorter line. So as we contemplate the big lie, the complete reversal of facts, the great impudence of the complete reversal of facts that we are seeing in connection with Eddie the Friendly Spook, just keep in mind that social psychology experiment. Now, another consideration here is the concept of future shock. I have been very bitterly amused to watch people getting so outraged at this. Take it from someone, even though I'm somewhat behind the curve in terms of high tech. I have been based professionally in the Silicon Valley for 3-plus decades in my entire professional life. And trust me, all of the high-tech stuff, the internet itself, the GPS systems in your smartphones, all of this stuff is military and spook stuff. Not only have I been talking about NSA and GCHQ vacuuming up electronic communications, both internet and telephone calls, for many, many years, I did a program in July of 2010, right about Independence Day, called In Your Facebook, a Virtual Panopticon. People think these social networks are so wonderful, so enabling, so freedom-bestowing, to coin the term They were all developed in connection with the intelligence community. In fact, one of the major capitalizers of Facebook was Peter Thiel, an arch-reactionary and uber-fascist of sorts, using libertarian cover for his views. It is his Palantir firm that appears to have been the developer of the Prism software at the epicenter of Snowden's, quote, disclosures, unquote. Palantir, by the way, denies that that Prism is the same Prism. Palantir was developed in connection with the intelligence community, and as we get into our discussion, we're going to read a number of articles from the press talking about, and from the blogosphere, talking about Palantir's Prism and its use by the intelligence community. The notion that there would be, the intelligence community would be using two separate counter-terror software applications with identical names is frankly laughable. These high-tech firms are nothing if not litigious, and there would have been major copyright or patent infringement litigation, and boy, Peter Thiel has the money to do it. Peter Thiel, by the way, has networked with the Cato Institute, and he's a person who has said that freedom, and he has concluded that freedom and democracy are no longer compatible. And one of the reasons he believes that is that we have done what he believes is the mistake of allowing women to vote. So that will give you an idea of the kinds of people that lie behind these freedom-bestowing technologies. Suffice it to say that here in the planet of the apps, so to speak, these are remarkable technologies, and people enjoy them. They have embraced smartphones with a GPS in them that can locate you to within 30 feet of your location at any time. You cannot turn that off or disable it. And people love having the world at their fingertips. They love being able to do financial transactions on their smartphones, do their social networking, send people and post people with photographs on the internet, and all kinds of things. They can download movies and television programs and music and sporting events. They literally have the entire world at their fingertips. Well, folks, that is a two-way street. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And just as you have the whole world at your fingertips, you, ladies and gentlemen, are at the whole world's fingertips. So my counsel is get used to it, and if you're boo-hooing about it, get over it. Part of it is that we are in a new technological era, and many of the things that I hold near and dear, and many of the things that have been bemoaned in connection with this, such as the Bill of Rights, privacy, civil liberties, etc., have really, in many ways, become technologically obsolescent, if not altogether obsolete. A couple of more things. As I said, I have been talking about this stuff for decades, and in fact, this is all on the public record, and almost all of it anyway, on the public record for a long time. We're going to talk about Snowden's ride as a psyop, which is exactly what it is. It is, to a knowledgeable observer, a very, very obvious intelligence operation. But one should know that what is really at stake here, primarily, is the harvesting of metadata. That, folks, is done by every internet company. It is done by every cell phone company. Not just that, but when you, for example, go to a retail outlet and get one of those discount cards for Walgreens or Safeway or CVS, every purchase you make is recorded on a computer. And that information is shared without your permission by, with, I should say, other companies. The ultimate dissolution of civil liberties, the ultimate invasion of privacy, wasn't bemoaned at all. I remember back, whether it was the 80s or the 90s, when the companies began requiring urine sampling as part of their hiring process, or even as part of their employee standardization, to coin a term. I remember telling people this was not a good idea, because when you submit a urine sample for openers, your urine sample becomes the property of the testing company. You might want to look into some of those companies who are doing that testing, because, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, there are some very unpleasant folks associated with those companies. But beyond that, when you submit a urine sample, and the testing is not generally done by the company who is considering hiring you or for which you are already working, the testing is done by an outside company, and your urine sample becomes their property. You have no say in how that is used, and, ladies and gentlemen, your DNA is in your urine sample. That is the ultimate invasion of privacy. So when you submit a urine sample, you are basically, in effect, putting your DNA online. But you didn't hear some great big squawking about this, did you? No, it was fairly placidly accepted. I remember telling people that they should be very careful about this, that these testing companies were going to start selling DNA information to other firms, not necessarily urine sampling companies, but medical companies, scientific companies. There have been articles in the last 10 years or so about exactly that sort of thing happening, and about litigation that has been taking place in connection with that. Well, again, you're worried about privacy, you better be worried about urine testing, because boy, that is the ultimate invasion of privacy. Also, with regard to civil liberties, people paid very little attention to what was really going on with the O.J. Simpson case. I've done a lot of work about that. There is enough information on the public record in a number of people whom there's enough information on the public record, certainly to indict Mark Furman, if not convict him, under the consciousness of guilt principle. I did a program called Where Was Mark Furman on the night of June 12, 1994. In a nutshell, three deputy district attorneys submitted a document to Marcia Clark a week after the killings, saying that Mark Furman appears to have had a romantic involvement with or interest in Nicole Brown Simpson. Mark Furman was, and generally deputy DAs don't help the prosecution in the capital murder case. Mark Furman was the head of a white supremacist group within LAPD called WASP, standing for White Anglo-Saxon Policemen. His former watch commander was the highest-ranking female member of the LAPD. She had had to discipline Furman when he scrawled KKK on the Martin Luther King holiday on the station precinct calendar. She was Lance Ito's wife. Lance Ito would not permit the information about WASP into the case. It was Mark Furman who conducted the illegal search of O.J.'s property, where they came up with so much of the, quote, evidence, unquote. And Mark Furman lied under oath during the pre-trial hearings about where he was and what he was doing on the night of June 12, 1994. The O.J. case involved some really, really major breaches of Anglo-Saxon legal principle, in particular in connection with the Civic case. In order to have Nicole Brown Simpson's, quote, diary, unquote, admitted into evidence, in contrary to the prohibition in our legal tradition against hearsay evidence, that is sometimes breached. But a law was passed almost in secret by the California State Legislature to allow what was represented as Nicole Brown Simpson's diary into evidence. It was not a diary. It was a thought journal that she was keeping for her psychotherapist. It included her fantasies and her dreams, okay? As of that law, as of the passage of that law, Anglo-Saxon legal precedent went back literally to the Salem witch trials. And also in connection with the civil case, O.J. Simpson, the prosecution, or the plaintiff's counsel, I should say, produced a number of photographs of O.J. Simpson wearing what were purported to be Bruno Mali shoes, including gray Bruno Mali shoes. These pictures were very crude forgeries because Bruno Mali had never made a gray shoe. The reason that washed in the civic case was because the judge blocked O.J.'s counsel from examining the evidence against his client, okay? Now, with that, Anglo-Saxon legal precedent in the United States of America was rolled back to before the Magna Carta. The passage of the Patriot Act really didn't bother me one damn bit because everything that we have treasured in terms of our Anglo-Saxon legal tradition was tossed out the window during the O.J. case. First, when Nicole Brown Simpson's thought journal, including her dreams and fantasies, was admitted into evidence, it was rolled back to the time of the Salem witch trials. And then, when O.J.'s counsel was blocked from examining the evidence against his client, well, it went back to before the Magna Carta. So for those of you who are worried about your civil liberties, don't be worried about your civil liberties. You damn well don't have any anymore, and when you lost them, a lot of you were out there cheering, "Yeah, we got the nigger," and that's how that one was received out in the general public. It was a lynching, a media lynching. When the verdict was announced in the civil case, the media cheered. Daniel Petrocelli, the plaintiff's lead counsel, was bragging in interviews about how much he enjoyed his breakfasts with Greta Van Susteren. There was a gag order in that case. That should have been grounds for an immediate mistrial. But nobody missed that. Greta Van Susteren now holds forth on Fox News. So, by the way, does Mark Furman. So again, for those of you who are worried about your civil liberties, I can appreciate that. Don't worry, you don't have any. They disappeared with the O.J. case, and most of you didn't miss them one damn bit, did you? Okay? So, but in the end, oh, that was just O.J. That didn't bother us. When a high-profile individual, and O.J. Simpson, by the way, didn't mean jack to me. He's just another ex-jock and B-grade movie actor and Madison Avenue pitch man. But when a high-profile person like O.J. Simpson can have his civil liberties blown off the hell, you don't have any civil liberties. So don't worry about it, folks. It's gone. And most of you not only didn't miss it, you cheered it when it happened. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program 753, overview on Snowden's ride, analysis of the destabilization of the Obama administration. By the way, the exact title of this will be formalized when I write the description. This program is being recorded on August 18th of 2013. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.